Edison Hatter here for a special episode of First Over with Edison Hatter. We've got some Century Mile racing to discuss on American Thanksgiving evening, and I will not be your host for the afternoon. We'll throw that over to Mike Probosi in a little bit, and he'll introduce the group of panelists he has with them for this special roundtable. But for Century Downs this coming Thursday, you don't want to miss the Standardbred action at Century Mile on Thanksgiving Day, November the 24th, for the National Drivers' Championship. The card will kick off at 6:15 Mountain Time, that's 8:15 over here on the East Coast, where eight drivers are competing from across Canada to win their way to the World Driving Championship. Drivers must earn their way into the finals by finishing first or second in their respective regional driving championship. The winner will have the opportunity to represent Canada in the 2023 World Driving Championship to be held in Italy in conjunction with the World Trotting Conference. So for the eight drivers that will be competing, that will be Julius Berriou, Pascal Berube, Mark Campbell, Samuel Filion, Mike Hennessy, Doug McNair, Louis-Philippe Roy, and Dave Kelly. There will be eight competition races on the card, which again starts this Thursday, November 24th at 6:15 Mountain, 8:15 Eastern Time. And with that, I will hand it over to Mike Probosi to talk us through this special roundtable.
And here we are.
Woo!
Four of us together in a roundtable fashion. And I feel like that these roundtables are really quite informative. So we thought we'd do one here for this National Driving Championship for Canada. And I have three other very competent, very capable guests on this roundtable. And we'll start with, of course, how can we not start with the man, Ray Catolo.
Oh, I'm surprised you threw it to me first. I was expecting you to curveball me and say the slough man over there who probably has a higher ROI than most countries' GDP. I'm happy to be here. And on top of it, happy to be part of showcasing something that, you know, might get overlooked in the sport somewhat because, you know, there's great racing all over the place, but we always focus on Meadowlands and Mohawk. But there's always something interesting that will go on at other tracks, including in a circuit like Alberta with this National Driving Championship. And on top of all of that, it's going to be a real cozy evening, I feel like, because it's going to be right after your meals. You can sit back and wager way too much money.
That's right. Thanksgiving night. Not a lot of competition on Thanksgiving night. There is some Canadian tracks going. You have Woodbine Thoroughbred starting earlier. Mohawk will be racing. But as far as on the U.S. side, very limited. I think there's some Charlestown going. This will be a higher handled event, I think, is a must watch. Starts at 8:15 Eastern. I know whenever we were looking into this pod and starting to talk about it, there was a person that we had to get like automatically, and that was Murray Slaw. So Murray, why, like, you're the Century Mile King, Century Downs King. We had to have you for this pod.
Well, I appreciate that, Mike. Happy to be here. And yeah, I'm just happy that, like Ray's saying, that some Century Mile racing, Alberta racing, is going to get the spotlight on Thursday night. And I think that is the case. Certainly going against Mohawk is never easy. But I think that across North America, people are going to tune in because it's an exciting event. You've got a group of eight drivers driving mostly horses they've never driven before. It's ripe for chaos, big payouts, exciting racing. So I'm glad it's going to get the spotlight. And I'm going to be tuning in just like everyone else, you know, and firing away from my basement in all likelihood, and try to win some money. And I've got definitely some opinions to give you guys, and you know, happy to get at it here.
Well, I can say just from his Twitter, I'm sure he doesn't post half the stuff he does, but there is nobody that fires like Murray.
If I post everything that I do, you'd probably, it'd be a little scary probably, Mike, but no, I don't. I probably post 20% of what I do.
All right. So the final member of the crew, and this is the hometown guy, the racing secretary at Century Mile, and somebody that I just met recently, but we definitely welcome his knowledge to the pod, and that's Josh Murphy.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Obviously excited here. I work out of Century Downs with Murray a lot, and we're excited to kind of have a showcase here on Alberta racing, and kind of, you know, we've made some strides here this year. You know, purses have gone up, and this will be a good chance to get a bunch of eyes on our product, hence the Thursday night, kind of an interesting time slot, but we're trying to get as many people watching and as good a handle as possible. So should be a good event. We obviously got a bunch of talented drivers coming to town, and we're looking forward to all the action in a couple of days.
So Josh, talk to us a little bit about the format for this, because I found it to be quite interesting the way they decided to do this and to where they made it very much even, almost like a fantasy draft type format. And they evened out the post for every race. They evened out the choices for every race. So talk about what we're doing here as far as the selections for the horses here on these 8 races.
So I thought it was a really cool way they did it, was how everyone basically got a draft pick in each race from each spot. So you were going to in one race draft first, one race draft last, and everywhere in between. So that was completely random. But yeah, every driver had a first choice in some race, and every driver had a last choice and everything in between. So I thought that made it very interesting that it wasn't just a completely random draw. And then also after they made their choices and everyone had their picks, they also did a random post draw. So everyone's going to drive from each post position. So I think they've done it as fair as possible. And I thought the most interesting part was seeing how some guys drafted that you kind of, you know, depending, say you get your first pick in a race where Oriental Express is in, and he's going to be probably 3-5, 2-5, looks to be probably the most logical winner on the card, as opposed to another race where the favorite might not even be 2-1. And that can be difficult. And even in a race that's more competitive, you might have the 7th pick, but hey, you know, the 7th horse isn't a ton different than the 3rd horse. So it can balance out. And I thought that was kind of the most interesting part. And it gives guys a chance to kind of have some say at the draw and take it upon themselves to try to carve out a successful night for themselves before they ever step on the racetrack.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating the way they did it. And I'm a fan of this. I think it lends itself to, you know, this isn't going to be your typical night at the harness track, especially at a place like this where you have a huge favorites every race that you're trying to decide, okay, am I using, not using? I'm going to throw it to Murray real quick, though. Talk about some of the wagering opportunities, especially with the high minimums at Century, the tendency for carryovers. Talk about what you're thinking about attacking there.
Yeah, the real best wager, I think, Mike, in Alberta is the pick 4, because it does have a $1 minimum. Like you said, it's not a wussy 20-cent pick 4 like some places have, which I absolutely hate. It's a $1 minimum. Therefore, you're going to have a chance for a carryover. You also, with any kind of a price horse, knock out a lot of people. People can't spread as much when it's a dollar base. So we've got an early pick 4 on the card that starts in race 2. So race 2 is not a driver championship race, but it, you know, it does start the early pick 4. And then the late pick 4 starts in race 7, and that covers the final 4 races. And that's a very wide open sequence. Very good pick 4 to go after, I would think, would be that late one starting in race 7. Those are the main wagers I'm going to look at. The other thing to keep an eye on is the superfecta. If nobody hits it in Alberta, it's a carryover, a full carryover to the next race. So you always want to keep an eye out for one of those, because then they do bet the next race super usually pretty good, and it's usually a half decent payout, even if you get a carryover of $1,000 or $2,000 in the superfecta.
So Ray, I know you're not huge into, you know, I don't know how much Century Mile you're betting, but you're definitely working for Standard Bread Canada almost mm-hmm. seems like every night of the week. So you have some familiarity with these drivers, especially on all these different circuits, mm-hmm. Some of these horses. So I feel like your perspective is a good one for this roundtable.
And on top of that, long before I even was working at Standard Bread Canada, it's not Alberta, but one of the places I plied my trade was at Fraser Downs. That's where I really was learning how to handicap and how to try and look at those kinds of races that aren't necessarily of the same caliber as our metropolitan elite races we have in, you know, the Meadowlands and all these other A tracks. But another one that was a growing ground for me was Northlands Park before that became, Northlands. I never played much Alberta Downs or even looked at much Alberta Downs. But Northlands was kind of like a nostalgic little place for me. And so Alberta racing has always kind of had that little spot with me too. Just because it can be quirky, it can be weird, it can be logical, it can be irrational. And so in that way, it creates an interesting handicapping puzzle to figure out. And for the most part, Century Downs also plays much differently than Century Mile. So when we're looking at these races for Thursday, we want to keep that in mind, where maybe if we see horses not performing at Century Downs, perhaps to give them a bit of allowance when they're moving to a surface and a super long stretch like Century Mile.
Yeah, depending on who the horse is, Ray, I've got a few here that I could tell you that I know like Century Mile better. Josh, I'm sure, has some too, but it's a quarter mile home stretch at Century Mile. So there's some that definitely like that. Ones that have trouble in the turns at Century Downs, they're basically really up against it if they interfere with themselves. At Century Mile, they can kind of baby them through the turn, and then they still got a quarter mile left to go. So, yeah, there's a few that like the mile better, and you might get a price on. I know one I would mention right off the bat would be Tropical Dragon in the fifth. That's a horse that really likes the mile better.
I feel like mile racing, too, is almost like the Ferris. But half-mile racing, there's a lot more trips in there. A mile, I feel like, is more fair to everyone, to everyone involved. You have a lot more movement. You have a lot more... I just feel like that the racing is going to be won by the better horses and things. It's a lot less luck and a little more, you know, the better horse that's winning. But okay, so let's talk about these races. So we're going to start in race number three. Now remember, this is Thursday night, 8:15 Eastern, starts the first race at Century Mile, but the National Driving Championship does not start until race number three. And this race number three is the Fillies and Mares non-winners of five or 35,000 life with a claiming tag of 9,000. Let's start with Josh. Who do you like in the third?
I thought the one that kind of stood out in here was the five Gold on the Horizon. There's a few that have kind of been racing up here. A lot of these actually normally race in the non-four condition claimer. As you can see kind of by the $5,300 purse by a chunk of them. So I thought the five and the two kind of stood out on class. Gold on the Horizon tried the four to five straights on opening day at Century Mile, and that was too tough. I mean, there's some horses that in there that we'll see in the Philly Pace of Limbs on Saturday going to be trying to tackle Divine Art. So that was much tougher, but prior to that, she looked very good. I mean, she's four to five in this class two starts ago and one easy. And the start before that, even that was a mix with wide open $9,000 mares. So not even just condition claiming horses, but the legit open nine mares that you'll actually see earlier on in the card that aren't an NDC race. So I really thought Gold on the Horizon was one that stood out. I don't see any reason why she won't like this track. And I think she just has a bit of a class edge on this field.
Okay. One thing I do want to mention here real quick is I actually have the list of who picked where in every race. And this was Samuel Filion's first pick here in the eight mm-hmm. eyes on the prize. Mm-hmm. And Gold on the Horizon was the second pick. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but I will try to mention the top two picks in the races. Ray, get in there.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing because it's interesting when Sam had a choice of what maybe you could assume just from looking at the proof was the morning line favorite over the horse that he picked. It's interesting that he went with the horse that he picked. The horse did show a strong middle move, but then faltered in the stretch, but not as badly as she did when racing against Salary in the super final. She's a three-year-old going against older at this point in the year, and in this class, that doesn't really bother me too much. It's certainly an interesting move. You look back to her races at the track on two, she has a ton of late speed. And part of me, one of the things I'm looking at when I'm trying to figure out trips in these races is my inclination is to go against who might be on the lead. Try and find horses that might be able to be up close, trip out, because when you have that long of a stretch, it doesn't matter the horse. These horses can get lost. And so whoever is kind of just sucking along has someone cut in the wind might be able to just have fresher legs and get by with that much stretch to go. The eight certainly does that. Otherwise, you know, you got logical horses in the two and the five. The four was kind of interesting to me because she can go to the lead and she would be one that would be my kind of compass to figure out how speed would be holding if she does go to the front and maybe quits. Overall through the whole night, I'll be watching the board beyond my own opinion to see what people are betting and such, because we'll kind of see some things slip through the cracks. Another thing I'm interested in seeing is how hard do the Ontario guys get bet? Because we know that in these contests, people will see a Pascal Berube versus a Doug McNair. And more often than not, they're probably going to go for Doug McNair.
I agree on a couple of those points. I don't mind the four in the race. This horse seems to take money every single time. You're definitely going to get an overlaid price, and she certainly has figured things out. Six wins and 18 starts this year. Three-year-old filly seems to be getting better. I feel like that she has a big chance. Murray, what do you think?
I ended up with the same one as Josh, the 5 gold on the horizon. I mean, it's pretty obvious when the last two times she raced in an, 9,000 condition claimer, she was a winner. Mid-gate starting spot, can race up front or from behind. I think Mike has a great chance to get off to a good start here for the local guys. I think it's interesting. Sam took the 8, like Ray detailed. I mean, the horse is 1 for 23 lifetime. She's more of a second, third, or fourth kind of horse. She's got the 8-hole now. I mean, that's a tough task for your top pick. You only get one top pick in the whole competition, right? So that one for me, I mean, I've got 4 horses I think I like more than her. I like 5, 4, 3, and 2. You also have an interesting situation where the 3, Do No Harm, Dave Kelly has driven this filly before and done pretty well with her. I think she's going to crack the super. She could do it at a price. And he is, of course, driving against his own horse, which is the 8 Eyes on the Prize that he trains. So you get that kind of thing happening in driver challenges. It's something to keep an eye on. How do Dave Kelly's horses do with other guys driving them? He's only driving one of his own horses. That's Bohannon. Later mm-hmm. in the competition. One thing with Mataki, you mentioned she does get bet every week. She was getting bet because she was Campbell in front end, and you got to bet that a century down. Yeah. But now she's moving to Century Mile. I know Jill Berrio, very capable. He's going to leave. I think Louis is going to leave with the 6. Just depends how fast they go. Those are the 2 front ends. There's really no other front end speed here. And then you see, I think horses like the 3 and the 5 and the 8 trying to come from behind. I see McNair sitting close as well, but not parking the 4 and the 6. So 6-4-2 front end, 3-5-8 coming from behind is the way I see this race. I tend to lean to the come from behind 5 with 3 somewhere underneath is what I'll be looking to play there if I'm playing a try.
And the first race too of the competition, I'm sure some guys are going to be pumped up. There's going to be some early moves. There's going to be some, some things going on before these guys settle in.
I know Mataki is a horse that, I mean, she would get pretty soft in the lane at Century Downs. So that is a definite caveat when you move to Century Mile. Mm-hmm. He's gonna have to reserve her as much as he can. If you use that horse early, she will stop.
Uh-huh. Yeah, very interesting race there in race number 3. We're gonna move on. Race number 4, and it's a 5 claimer, numbers of 901 last 3 starts. Also eligible fillies and mares claiming 6,000. And for first picks in this race, I'll just do it right away though. The 1 Oriental Express, who tends to look probably 2 to 5 on paper, that was Doug Bignair's first pick, and the 6 was the second pick. Berube picked Stylo Milo Haas.
Yeah.
Oh no, I like Hose for the end.
BC, his name is SOH, and he puts Haas HOS on the end of all of his horses' names, so that's where that one comes from. He had the horse when he was young. But yeah, I agree. Oriental Express, Mike, if you don't mind me leading off, I agree with the guys. Anyone that said this is the most obvious winner on the card, I think she is. I think she could be 1 to 5, maybe even 1 to 9, and probably 1 to 9 the best. Probably racing 2, maybe 3 classes lower than she could. Obviously, there's got to be a reason for that. I know the connections are sharp. I know Harvey Jaeger. I know Brinsley Brooking Lutz is doing a great job training. There's a reason she's in for 6. But just 1 for 6 at the mile last week. Super, super easy. You got Doug McNair in the rail. I mean, how do you pick against this horse? You can't. I think she's the single in the early pick 4. And I think the most likely winner on the card. And I think a great draft pick by Mr. McNair.
Well, that's a good question to kind of build off of with this race specifically, because Murray, you're an avid Mohawk player. Mm-hmm. And sure, Mohawk is different than the Meadowlands, but even this trend kind of runs at the Meadowlands. How strong of a benefit is that inside draw compared to the more outside draws where horses can build their speed up a bit more? Does it not matter as much at Century Mile as it does at other tracks?
I'd say not as much. We don't have a slanted gate like Mohawk has. I believe that's right, Josh. The gate is straight as an arrow. So
correct, yeah.
You will have outside horses leave, and they have a little time to at least cross over at Century Mile compared to the Downs. The rail is much more of a benefit at Century Downs, of course. But I just see... has the rail, best horse, Doug McNair. You know she's leaving out of there. Mm-hmm. And if he lets one go, he's going back around and they're going to have to catch her. And I just don't think they do. I think in some other races, you might see more action from outside leavers, Ray. But I think in general, your question of Mohawk and Meadowlands, you got a lot better chance to leave and get position at those tracks than you do at Century Mile. I mean, there was times in the winter last year, I was filling in calling up there and it was almost racing like a half mile track. A Century Mile, because no one would pull because it was minus 25 and a 30 mile an hour wind. and they sat till the top of the stretch and they all found out. I mean, it's not going to be like that in this competition, I would assume, because it's, you know, it's going to be competitive and hard racing. But the outside posts are generally not great at Century Mile. And certainly when you've got everyone sitting and not pulling, they're even worse. But yeah, it's going to take a lot. For me, the way I look at this race is I'm conceding it to Oriental Express. The one thing I would mention is if you want to make money, or the way to possibly make money with Oriental Express, is I'm looking at leaving out the six underneath. This is not an easy horse to drive. Mm-hmm. Brandon has to use all of his immense talent and skill to get everything he can out of this horse to get second, third, and fourth every week. I know Pascal Berube is a good driver, but he's not familiar with this mare. And I think she could be right out of it. And that's where you might be able to make money on this race, is leave the six out underneath the one.
I was thinking the same thing, because I generally hope that people bet this horse as hard as the morning line says, because everything on her lines to me says that she might be close, but then there are going to be others who have a bit more oomph in that final quarter that will just go right by. She always seems like she kind of lags in the stretch. She has some starts where she's able to gain a bit of ground, but for the most part, the trend is that whoever is in front of her tends to get away from her.
Right. And yeah, that's with Brandon driving, and he knows the mare, and he's asking her for everything he can. I mean, it's, for me, 1 with 2, 3, 5, 7, 8, leave out possibly the 4 as well. I just don't think that she's the same horse as she was last year. She was pretty good, or earlier this year. Mm-hmm. And then, to me, you might get a price underneath, but you definitely can't have the 6 underneath the 1, or it's just going to pay absolutely nothing. And I think there's a decent chance she misses the top 3, at least, if not the top 4.
A good note, too, is that it's probably going to be the warmest it's ever been in Alberta on that Thursday, 45 degrees Fahrenheit. I was about to say centigrade. That would be boiling for Alberta.
That would be a problem. I saw a forecast of 3 Celsius, which is in the 30s. That could be for the evening when we're racing, but not too bad, mm-hmm, considering late November in the Edmonton area. You're absolutely right, Ray. It could have been minus 20 easily.
Yeah, this could develop to be some kind of a boat race. And in these kinds of boat races, it almost, the move might be to take a horse like the 1 and then just look at the board and kind of evaluate. If you see a horse like, I don't know, if the 3 is like 20-30 to 1, maybe put that horse for second, or the 8 for, like, just go right, obvious, maybe the 8 for second, because everything shapes upward. The 6 is probably not going to be value in the verticals, and the verticals are pretty much all you have here, aside from starting a double, which I don't really know how much value there's going to be if you have a 2-to-5 shot that might lead it off. But this definitely looks like a case of Oriental Express just only fitting into this condition, since she went up to the preferred. She wasn't really competing as well with those horses, so maybe this is just kind of like the baseboard for her based off of what she has with 90,000 in the bank and 17 wins. And that makes it difficult to take anyone else, forbid like the 2 or the 4 or even the 5 springing some kind of unforeseen performance.
Josh.
Yeah. I mean, I think Oriental Express, I mean, I still think there's some kind of red flags there, but off a recent effort with all the things you guys kind of touched on, it's hard to go against her. I was kind of surprised he didn't like show up in the 9 mares. That's not an NDC race on the card. It's only a 5-horse field. And I thought they might jump her up in there, but mm-hmm, I guess they got away with it. And I'm sure there's something that she's not quite the same horse we saw this summer at Century Downs when she's, you know, carved out a good year, but she looks pretty tough. I thought the 1 I kind of wanted to go underneath with was the 2, Treasure Horizon. Hasn't raced in a while, just came off the qualifier. But the fact she's in here for no price, I found kind of interesting. Obviously, Dave Kelly trying to protect her a little bit. And this is a horse that has some back class, was racing better in straight conditions a while back, and, you know, qualified with some decent horses. Wilsey, Blue Hoos. I mean, Wilsey's a nice enough horse who just can't stay flat. But when he's right, he's pretty talented. And I thought it was kind of 1-2 was the interesting way. I agree with you guys. I don't really want any part of Stylo Milo Haas. 1 for 24 in the year. You know, I've seen enough of her in spots where she should be tough and just hasn't got it done. And True Crime, like Murray said, she went on a tear this year. She was getting claimed back and forth, but she's dropped off a cliff, and her qualifier didn't encourage me either. I think it's 1-2 for me and just kind of turn the page.
Here's a question, Josh. Did Dave Kelly have a chance to draft Treasure Horizon, his own horse?
Well, I'm trying to think off the top of my head.
Do you have the order, Mike?
He had the last pick in the race, so he did.
Oh, Dave had the last pick. Okay, yeah. So there you go. So yeah, he had no choice then.
All right, so the 5 is going to get second. Noted.
One horse I will mention here before we move on, and that's the 7 Rural Art, who has made 500,000. It's an 11-year-old horse that has proven over a mile track. I mean, did win at Hawthorne this past year, albeit in slow time, but this horse has a mark of 50-4. As far as picking up pieces, this horse has been known to pick up pieces basically his entire career. So in a race that really doesn't have much of a standout underneath, you know, the favorite, and who even knows if the favorite's 100% in the race, I feel like that horse has a chance to get something.
Especially if Jill sends.
I think he will. I think the battle for the 2-hole to sit behind Oriole Express is going to be between the 2 Atlantic boys. It's going to be between the 3 and the 7. I think they'll both be looking for the 2-hole.
So let's move on here. Race number 5. It's a numbers of 5 or 35,000 life. Decent purse here, 7,900. First pick in the race here, and it was Mike's first pick, and that is the 8, No Collusion. Let's start with Ray.
Yeah, so this is a running trend too with these races where you look at the form and you see one horse that has lines on paper that logically make you think, oh, how can this horse lose compared to the rest of the field? And it's a great question to ask yourself. No Collusion's won 12 races from 31 starts, but what that means is that this horse has also somehow lost 19 races. What do we do with that information? It all comes down to how they're betting. I don't know what kind of favorite No Collusion is going to be in this race from the 8-hole after winning it 14-1 last time against similar. Maybe I can't see him being that heavy of a favorite. He might be somewhere in like a 6-5, 7-5 lukewarm position. And there are certainly tons of horses in this race, particularly on the outside of the gate, that stand a chance. I was interested to see that Murray earlier mentioned Tropical Dragon, because that was a horse I had marked as a maybe purely off of that track on 2 form, because it looked like this was one that didn't really get over Century Downs quite well. But when he was over that mile track, a track on 2, which I don't know how good the surface is there, but it is kind of a fast track from how it looks. And this horse was flying home week in, week out. If that was anywhere near 10-1 in the morning line, I'm certainly interested, because it looks like, if anything, based on how No Collusion goes into the race, Tropical Dragon might be able to tow right behind and can kick home better than No Collusion. So there's certainly value in that possibility. Blue Powder might get overplayed in this race. And beyond that, I have a tough time taking any of these horses off these layoffs. So I'm an open road to me is a huge question mark. I have no idea how to evaluate that form. And certainly Murray and Josh can probably provide more insight on how to interpret these horses' qualifiers off of as long of layoffs as they go. The 2 was the only other horse I'd marked as interesting, simply because the horse had outside draws last 2 starts and tends to get a piece whenever he can draw close to the inside. And so that would be a horse I'd probably, or the 2 being keeps getting better, I would probably be looking to put that horse somewhere in the lower spots of the Tri-Cent Super, given that he goes off a decent price.
A couple tidbits. I'll jump in here real quick. Dave Kelly had the second pick in the race. He picked the 6 Blue Powder, so he didn't pick his own horse. So that gives you that perspective. And also, I feel like, for me, the 2 keeps getting better. This was my value play I gave out on the Players Podcast, because for one, he's getting a massively better driver than he has been getting, and he gets a post relief. He's been racing at these upper levels. He has recency, and he's 8-1 morning line. So I feel like that, and that was Sam's. He was the 3rd pick in the race. He took this horse. Murray, what do you think?
First of all, I'll take exception to massively better driver, just for Nathan's sake. Nathan's a pretty good driver.
Yeah.
I just feel like that, I don't know. He's a bit passive for me, just for me.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. He's, Nathan can get one around, but Sam could do well with this horse from the 2-hole. The way I evaluated the race was 2 win candidates, 7 and 8. And underneath, I like 6 and 2. It's hard to recommend anyone else. Like Ray was saying, I don't know how to evaluate I'm an Open Road either. I think he's probably just going to try to suck along. The 3 is usually lucky to get a piece. Sub-Zero is interesting with Doug because he's front end, but he just stops so bad. I mean, Doug will have to work some magic. He knows how to keep a horse alive, but man, oh man, it's going to be hard to keep him alive. going to funk you up, has not raced well in a while. So I like Tropical Dragon, like I said, coming to the mile. I did not know that Dave had a chance to pick this horse. I know he knows the horse is good on a mile because that's why he always races him at the track on two. Mm-hmm. This horse has a 60% win percentage at the track on two. He wins almost every time he races on a mile track. So I'm a bit surprised. I mean, they don't try to race him at Century Downs because he just can't get around that oval, and that's why he made a break last time. Mm-hmm. So I'm surprised Dave didn't pick him. Mark Campbell should get along with him fine. I see the race kind of setting up the way Ray said, the 8 and the 7 rolling from the back, and the 7 might outkick the 8, and you're going to get a lot better price. So if he's 10-1, I have to put some money on Tropical Dragon. But I like 8 and 7 for win. I think the 6 and 2 are going to be horses that are players underneath, but I don't really like them for win.
Josh?
Yeah, I know in our players show I mentioned the same horses as Murray, Tropical Dragon. 10 of his wins have come over a mile track from the 13. And I mean, his last Century Down start, that was a sloppy, snowy day in Calgary where I think that race, Murray, I think about four horses actually made a break in there. And no surprise, yes, Tropical Dragon was one of them. And
Mike Dale made a break and still got second. And he came home in about 33 seconds. So yeah, race.
He cannot get around Century Downs. He'll like this track better. And the only other, I mean, No Collusion will be the heavy one. The other one I thought, I know you guys aren't as high on the win end, but Blue Powder, the fact Dave picked that one over Tropical Dragon, when Tropical Dragon you'd think has a good chance in here. I'm curious to switch from JF to Dave, if Dave's going to be a little bit more aggressive than JF, how he's going to drive him. But I'm sure he sees a little something there. 5-2 is a touch short, though, for a horse that's 2-36 on the year. But I wonder here if Dave's, you know, going to drive him a little bit more aggressive than JF has in the past. So we'll kind of see that. But I thought the outside of the gate was really the major players in this race.
We're also mentioning how we're evaluating drivers impacting how the horses are going to perform. What do we do that? I know you mentioned, Murray, that the 5 doesn't necessarily stand a chance. But one thing that stands out to me on this horse's form is goes to Louis Waugh, which we know what Louis can do. We also know what Louis tends to do.
Yes.
And you look back. This horse won gate to wire.
When Brandon drove this horse a couple of times, he was able to get him to go wire to wire. So I imagine that's what Louis is going to try to do. And there's not a lot of speed here. Sub-Zero has to leave, I assume. To me, Sure Gain, every time he leaves, he backs right out of it. So you'd think Berube would be a little more cautious with him. So yeah, I mean, if Louis somehow got that horse to the front and kept going, it wouldn't be a giant surprise. Would it kill most of my tickets? Yes. But I could see where you're coming from. This is a race where if you could key Oriental Express in the pick 4, which I think you can, I mean, there's nothing wrong with having all in this leg to come home, because there's no, even though No Collusion looks great with his 12 wins, like you said, he's got the 8 hole, and I mean, it's not going to be easy. So this is a race where it's a spread type race for me in the pick 4. But if I was betting a try, I wouldn't have anyone but 7 or 8 on top.
The 5 is 5 for 140 lifetime. Yeah.
And my most hated announcing name of all time. I have to announce them a lot.
Listen, again, you know, these races, they have a lot of variables here. We got, you know, brand new drivers, brand new setup, new track for a lot of these horses, you know, shipping in that they haven't seen this mile track for a while. So I think it's going to lend itself to really, really great racing and some great payoffs if you're right. Let's go to sixth race, numbers of 3 or 16,000 life, again with the 9,000 tag, which you can basically buy every horse at this racetrack for $9,000. Pascal had the first pick in the race. He picked Light My Shadow, which is the 2, the 8-5 morning line favorite. Let's go to Josh here. Who do you like in the sixth?
Yeah, I mean, he does stand out, Light My Shadow. I thought last race he was in a week. In a race where him and Grampian Road were kind of the two that stood out there. First time he'd been in for a tag, Sobey dropped him in. Obviously, Sobey trains at a pretty high percentage and looked really good doing it. Now he's going to step up from the non-2 claimer to the non-3. But I just thought, I mean, he did it so within himself last week. Draws well here. And I look at this field and there's not anyone that I'm overly sold on. I think Bohannon's one, you know, that might be worth including purely because Dave picked it himself, that he's obviously training driving. He's a horse that I've never quite figured out, Bohannon. He had some okay races back at track on 2 before, but he's kind of been a bit of a wild card. But I thought Light My Shadow is probably going to be the heavy favorite off his last effort, and I can't really fault him a whole ton. I think he'll be pretty tough in these condition claiming ranks.
I ended up having the two on top as well, Josh. I think a good pick by Pascal. That's obvious. I think the wild card in here, and I hate to go to McNair again, but the six is the wild card in here. This horse has speed, never been in for a price, at least I don't think has ever been, but not in recent memory. Has front end ability. And then picks up Doug McNair, he might just send and just try to bottom them out. I mean, I think this horse has to be included in your horizontals at least, because you're going to get a lot better price than with the two. That to me is the wild card. Underneath, I looked at Bohannon because, yeah, Dave actually picked this horse. Also dropping last race, Super Final Constellation, does have over a month off. Dave must think the horse is training back okay. So you got to consider the four. The one Louis's probably going to leave with, that's what he does best. He's got a lot of front end type horses. And then a horse that could just grind it out and will probably somehow crack the super would be the eight.
That was what I was going to touch on, because what's interesting is in my initial run through of this race, I didn't mark either favorite. So in my mind, when I was initially looking through, I think my approach to this race was, how can I beat the obvious? Because on one hand, I'm not super thrilled with the horse like Bohannon. It seems like he's still trying to figure himself out. He's coming off of a couple weeks a couple weeks rest, and you know, for a young horse, that can be good, that can be bad. Maybe he outclasses them and beats me. I don't know. I don't like 5-2 on that. The two seemed too obvious to me. Mm-hmm. You have a horse who wins by 10 lengths. It wins by 4 lengths. Obviously, two starts ago, that track at Century was it was a canvas of whatever the hell it was for the horse to finish 6 by 14 lengths.
Yes.
And so in my mind, I had two horses marked. I had Promising Flight marked because it's interesting that this horse, you know, off the 6 scratch, 1 by 8 lengths over at Century, then just kind of came up short the next week for whatever reason, and then tried to go first over and faltered as a result, which to me reads that this horse clearly probably has one way of going. Forbid the race he has a track on too on August 27th, where he just powered first over and they went slow enough in the final quarter, or the horses were weaker or whatever. He won as the odds on favorite. So if I'm at this point in the card seeing speed holding a certain way, I would probably lean towards the one a touch, but it might be a fool's errand to try and think the eight can win. But I think I'm going to get a good price on the eight. The horse always comes flying. The horse is always trying. And I would just hope that maybe the two is in fact too obvious, and that maybe off of those last couple of races, he's a bit shorter than he usually is. And a horse like the eight thrives moving from the 11/16 oval to the mile track, or I just get washed out by the two. I think that's probably the gamble I'll take here.
Probably one or the other. I agree. And yeah, I mean, YV Colonel Taylor is a grinder of all grinders though, Ray. The way this horse races is it looks like he's closing well, but really in the fields that he was racing against, it was just that he managed to keep pacing home in at least 30 seconds and he passed everybody. You know what I mean? It wasn't like he took off, but I could see him grinding out a check. Win to me is a lot to ask. I think a better win candidate is the one, because the other thing about Promising Flight is those two good races came at the 9,000 condition level. Last time he tried the straight non-winners of 2-3, and both Knockin' Boots and Matt's a Mystician, they'd be 1-9 in here, and that's who he was first over against last time. So big difference in company here.
So good. A couple points I want to make is one, these are, you know, a fairly cheap bunch of horses. The most money made in the race is by the one, probably because he's been around more than most of them. He's made a total of 33,000, and it just goes down from there. So I wouldn't expect these horses to overcome a lot of adversity. It appears that Promising Flight started to do much better after the horse added Lasix. So that was added Lasix on October 14th and blew out by 8 lengths. And then, you know, I feel like he's the most obvious horse in the race. I mean, he would be one I would lean on, especially in Maltese, because he's not the morning line favorite. He's the third choice. Yeah, you get Wah, but he just looks like he has the best form to me. He's older. He's probably more grizzled. I mean, he's had 71 lifetime starts. You know, some of these horses haven't even made $10,000. So I'm more interested in the one in the race, and I feel like that I would lean on him and then play for chaos underneath. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's, let's see. We've gone through four races. We got four to go. Let's talk about a little bit, just to kind of shift gears here and the actual World Driving Championship, which these guys are trying to get into. It happens every couple years, and we've had some bigger names that have won it over the years, especially some Canadian guys. Jody won it twice. Hervé Filion was the first one to ever win it. Sylvain also won it. J-Mac raced well in it. He didn't win.
No, but he did win.
Oh, he did he win. Did. Oh, that's right.
He was held in Canada, and he won. And the last leg was actually out in the Maritimes too. So he basically won it on home soil. So yeah, he did 2019, I believe that was.
Yep.
Yeah.
And there's been other big names that have won it. Dexter's won it.
Doug McNair has won it, I believe.
I think Jameson won it.
And Jody has won twice. Jody's won twice. Sylvain and Hervé Filion. Yeah, you betcha.
What's fun about that, though, is those races, especially whenever they have it over in Europe, some of those races, they're starting four across at the start, all lined up behind each other. And that's like a different version of racing than we're used to here. If you watch some of that international racing, it's far different than what we're used to.
Right. And we got a taste of it. We were able to host one of the rounds, you might say, when they had the World Driving Championship in Canada. We had a round it at Century Downs. And so I was announcing Bjorn Goop and all the rest of them, all the international drivers. And yeah, and Dexter Dunn was there, of course, et cetera, et cetera. And that was the time the JMAC won. But yeah, even here at Century Downs, they were generally three wide most of the race. And it was just totally different than what you see on a normal day. So, I mean, that's awesome to see that kind of thing. And, the winner of this competition that we're talking about is going to get to go and compete in the World Driving Championship. It's the following year. It's in three countries, I believe, Josh: Germany, Netherlands, and what's the other one?
Belgium.
Belgium. Yeah.
So it's an extended competition at different tracks and different countries even. And, what an opportunity for one of these drivers to get to go to that.
Yeah, I feel like it's like almost like the Olympics in some ways. I mean, it matters a lot in the eyes of the racing world, and just representing your country and stuff like that. There's something to that. I mean, all these guys want to win. And I think that even makes it even that much more better that, everybody's going to be trying every race to get every inch. So, and you don't always get that in harness racing. I mean, let's be real.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, it's going to be all out every race. And then the thing is, like, if you ever want to see a guy drive hard to get fourth to complete your super, this would be the night, right? Because every point counts. And that's why I think of a guy like maybe Dave took blue powder, because the horse gets second and third all the time. And those points are valuable, right? So, but yeah, I agree. Everyone's going to be all out every race. And that's just fun for harness fans and bettors like us to see, right?
Murray touched on an interesting point too, with a horse like Blue Powder. These guys might be looking at races where, if they look at all the horses, they might go, what is the safest way I could secure like a top three position or a top four position? There are certain horses where you could definitely think I have a strong win chance, but that's also an interesting angle to look at it too, based off of how those horses tend to perform.
I think that's how he looked at it, because Dave made he rated high in our Western regional here by getting a lot of seconds and thirds, and he knows the value in that. I think he probably looked at his Tropical Dragon, a horse that tends to make breaks, and and Blue Powder gets second and third every week, and he said, man, if I take Tropical and he breaks, he's going to be so upset with himself, right? So he went with Blue Powder, but I don't know exactly the thinking, but I can almost see that, right? Because a consistent horse is so valuable in these races.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, speaking of Dave, he had the first pick in race number 7, and that's fillies and mares, non-winners of 2 or 9,500 lifetime with the 9,000 claiming tag. Get that 9,000 out, because you're going to need it.
That's how we get 8 horses in a race. You got to be a 9 condition claimer.
And Dave again had the first pick, and that's Sullen Hanover, 2-1 morning line favorite. Ray, what say you?
I can see why this is a horse that is moving from being not for sale to being for sale, which, sure, in terms of what races this horse was in, they're non-winners of 2. This horse is back into non-winners of 2. But when the chance exists for your horse to go bye-bye, you might draw certain horses where certain trainers might go, if someone else took this horse off my hands, I'd be okay. So in that case, this is a class drop. For her, it clearly seems well needed, because you look at the races she's coming out of. She's 20-1, 30-1, 40-1. And in that way, just on that class drop, to go down to and be the 2-1 morning line favorite is that. That's the first thing I'm looking at here is if that's the case, where do all of these other horses rank in relation to that? And in my mind, there might be value there. For instance, Introduce Yourself comes in off a win at this level, did so coming from well off the speed in a way that is it kind of suits the style I'm looking for on a big track like this, and also affirms that maybe that is the way to look at, or that is the kind of trip to look for in some of these horses. But you're going from 10-1 to a horse who's probably going to take a lot more money because they see a win on the sheet. Kiki's Gem is one that is might be a bit interesting in the underneath spots, but this to me, this is purely a race where I could see many different horses winning, and it comes down to who is slipping through the cracks, because I don't buy that the 7 is a clear-cut favorite.
Josh?
Yeah, I mean, Sue Ellen Hanover, the 7, she's chased around a horse, Electric Amadeus, who Murray can attest to has been very, very impressive here, looked really, really good, you know, last start, and I think she'll make her way up closer to the preferred rank sooner than later. She's kind of going through her conditions as fast as she can. The horse I thought was a little interesting here was the 3, Outlaw Sky's the Limit. You know, last time she tried to make a move up the backside at Century Downs, there was a massive wind that day. She hit it and just stopped. It was like blizzard-like conditions. Mm-hmm. It just didn't work out at all. The winner just ran away from them on the front end. And prior to that, you know, was in a straight condition behind Katie Lou, who's a decent little horse, Rising Star. And then the start before that is what I really thought, you know, beating a nose as a short favorite in this condition. But now Louie gets a drive. I think he'll get along with her very well. I just think her last race dirties up her form a little more than it really is. I give her a valid excuse. And I like Louie, like I said, with this horse. Should be able to race a few different ways. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a little bit more aggressive with her. Maybe tries to get in behind Kiki's Gem. I think, you know, 5-2 is a touch short for me, but I thought she was a horse I wanted to play back off her last trip at Century Downs.
I tend to agree. I don't mind Outlaw Sky's the Limit. Feels like has some early speed. Should be able to get a trip in the race. I'm not sure that she wants to front them necessarily, but she has some back lines, and usually it looks like she's kind of bad every other, depending on where she's at and who she's against. And she's in with her friends here. I feel like that she moves up, and the switch to Louie will benefit her. I think should suit her style. What do you think, Murray?
Yeah, I'm on the same boat with you guys. I was kind of laughing when Josh said he liked the 3 because we usually end up on the same horses. But I've always liked this filly, and I think she has more to offer. I think Louie will be able to get it out of her. I haven't really been picking Louie in the previous races you guys have. This was the one where I liked him. I think he's got a good draw with a good horse that doesn't look as good as she should on form. Josh is absolutely right. First over last time, no chance in the world was she going to win that race in those conditions. So cross that one right out. Only raced in this class one other time, got beat a nose. And she took on everybody that race when she got beat a nose. It was a sloppy track. She parked everybody. So that was a good race. For me, it's got to be somewhere 3, 2, 7, or 8 has got to be where the winner comes from. I can't advocate betting 1, 4, 5, or 6 on top. But I think the price on the 3 will be better than the 7, and I think she actually has a better shot. And I'm not going to leave out McNair out of the 8-hole with a horse that could roll home well if they do mix it up front. But I'm definitely not singling the 7 anywhere. Definitely, certainly not if she's going to be 2-1. I don't like to single horses that have gone to the gate 24 times, have one win and no seconds. So that's a 3, 2, 7, 8 for me. And in the pick 4, those same 4 horses are the 4 that I would take.
Another instance of Dave picking against his own horse.
Yes.
Picking the race. So agree. Starts the pick 4. Remember, dollar minimum. Should be a very good pool here starting this late pick 4. 2, 3, 7 for me there. We'll talk about our tickets maybe at the end here.
Right. But, guarantees in the pick 4, Josh, in the pool? I don't think there is, but I just thought I'd ask you.
Yeah, no, I had reached out, but there's nothing confirmed from no guarantees.
Well, hopefully it might. I'm hoping like 10,000 maybe in that late pick 4 pool. I think that's reasonable.
Mm-hmm. I was secretly hoping, you know, that they just kind of went with a guarantee anyways and, yeah, put up a big number. But I talked to the racing manager there, and there wasn't anything planned at this point, so I can't think. But, yeah, it should be a healthy pool, I think. And like we touched on, I actually said on the player show before, yeah, the dollar pick 4s here, you know, you beat a favorite or two, and they pay very, very well.
Yeah, generally the whole pool when we have 2,000 in there. But yeah, it should be a good pool.
Well, maybe all the money went to the podcast. I hope that's the case. Race number 8, numbers of 4, 25,500 life with a shocking and claiming tag of 9,000. First pick here. Louis had the first pick. Interesting first pick here, Murray, on the 2. Mm-hmm.
Yes, he went with the 0-for-28 horse. But he did, I saw a thing on Standardbred Canada where he said he liked a couple other horses in here, but he went with the French-Canadian connection, yep. AF Gagné. So that's an interesting way to make your pick. But I mean, I don't mind Taj Mania, and this horse was pretty good last year. I remember Mike Hennessy driving this horse to some nice wins, including obviously the one in 55-4, which I'm sure I saw because it was at Century Downs. But Taj Mania for me last time got the perfect setup. They literally hammered on the favorite A Better Moment the entire mile. Horse after horse took a run at A Better Moment, and he was, you know, on his hands and knees coming home. JF swings Taj Mania out in the center of racetrack, and he's lucky to get second. So for me, that's a bit of a, you know, a strike against the horse. I would include him in, but I can't put him on top, obviously, with the 0-for-28 record. The other horses I thought had a chance to win, PT's Magic Mark, he has no Sterling record. He's 4-for-95, but wire-to-wire winner last time, Gilberio, you know, he's raced good ever since he's come back. Josh knows that. I mean, the horse was off for what, a year, 2 years? And he comes back and he's second, third, fourth, and first. I mean, he's a player, right? So, and Prairie Pursuit, front end speed. Mark Campbell knows how to get to the front end, and maybe they don't catch him. You got to consider that horse. Huge long shot, just completely out of nowhere. 50-1 horse would be the 8 Firm Ringo. Moves to Logan Gillis, who's had a nice year. This horse isn't that bad. Dave Kelly drove him before, I believe, for Jim Marino out at the coast. Mm-hmm. And that's a horse that's, I could see being 40-50-1 that could sneak in there somewhere. So, for me, it's some combination of 3, 2, 6, and 8.
Dave Kelly also drove that 8 horse for Dave Kelly. But what do you do?
He was better when he drove him for Jim Marino. But yes,
that was back in August. What about a horse? So you mentioned that race that Tasmania was second in.
Yes.
What do we do then with those other horses coming out of that, like Letizer and
Litazor? Yeah, Litazor for me, it's been a bet against horse for me for 2-3 months. The horse just, I mean, McNair driving instead of Jamie, you can make a case there, but I've just been against this horse. The horse is not showing any killer instinct whatsoever. I mean, even worse than Taj Mania probably that way. And so for me, I think he's overbet with Doug, and I'm just leaving him out. I honestly am. I mean, he could get third or whatever, but he's not in my pick 4.
Well, that's interesting because I don't mind Tough as Buff in this spot specifically, because this horse moved up the class ladder in 2 straight weeks and then just seems like has been running into some weird trips in his last couple starts until a couple weeks ago at Century Downs. It looked like the horse had a little bit of life late in the lane and could be one of those ones where if he just sticks to the inside and something weird happens, can definitely get up at a price. Because I know Berube is a real decent pylon driver from what I've seen of him at Rido-Carlton. And so I imagine I'm going to get a good price on that. Well,
that's the trip he got last time where he was right up the pylons and he didn't get there. But that is the trip he got last time. He never left the pylons.
Mm-hmm. And those are the kinds of horses I like to try and find either for, you know, long shot win hope, but for the most part, great. Those are great underneath horses because they always find a way to sneak into contention. Same with a horse like the 4 Teddy Hanover. This horse is 3-for-31, but you see the horses hit the board 16 times in his career and does so in any way necessary. He'll either sit close and just cash a check or he'll find a way into the flow. The only issue is he can't kick home. So
he's super lazy is the way I would describe Teddy Hanover. I would, of your ones you're mentioning, I would take Tough as Buff over both Teddy Hanover and Litazor in my rankings, the way I see these horses. But Tough as Buff has also been wind shy. I mean, he had one win on the whole year until he won those 2 in a row against pretty weak company, including Teddy Hanover. So for me, he's facing tougher here. I think the 2, 3, and 6 are all better horses than Tough as Buff usually races against.
But does Josh agree?
I kind of agree with both of you in a sense. I went 2, 5, 6 in my pick 4. Taj Mania, I like Louis taking this horse. I'm obviously hesitant of his wind shy record. Tough as Buff for some of the reasons kind of Ray touched upon a little. I'll give this horse another chance if he's 10-1 in here. And I thought Prairie Pursuit was kind of the logical one. actually raced upper class last time. That was a race mixed with some wide open six claimers as well as non-five, 9,000, of course, condition claimers. And, you know, I thought he raced pretty well in there. Kelly Hort's only had this horse for a couple months now, but he's kind of got a lot out of him. And those are kind of three I wanted. I've tried Litazor a couple times earlier this year, and that was enough for me. I find it hard to believe looking at Litazor that he actually does have four wins. I can't ever remember him winning.
I think they were all in May or earlier. Yeah,
I guess I can barely remember what I did yesterday, so it's no surprise. But yeah,
he hasn't won in a while. He hasn't won in quite a while. He's earned a lot of money.
I feel, Murray, like what you said, he's been in a couple spots where you thought, you know, if he has really no excuses in here. So yeah, I went 2-5-6. I kind of was hoping, you know, to get a bit of a mid-price here with either a Toughest Buff or Taj Mania, but I thought Prairie Pursuit was probably your deserving favorite off his last couple starts.
He's the horse to catch. There's no doubt about that. Yes. I think what Ray's mentioning, see if the speed's holding on. That's that's everything for me with Prairie Pursuit. Is the speed holding on? Are they going wild every race? Is there any kind of bias? Because if the speed's not holding on, he has no chance.
And that's the kind of horse,
But if it is, he could.
Earlier in the card, it was playing differently. You might just toss him completely and throw another horse in there or just go too deep. But if it's playing, if speed's okay, he's one you want in there. But yeah, I agree. If there's speed struggling, he's not the type of horse I want to include in there. I would look to maybe throw in a PT's Magic Mark then or just fin my ticket down to the 2-5, which sounds kind of scary when I say it that way.
Couple notes. So Prairie Pursuit was the second choice in the race for Campbell, and I'm sure he was shocked that that horse was there.
Right.
I kind of agree that it's the 2-3-6. I mean, the 3, I think, is racing well, comes off a win, was favored there. The problem is the horse is 4-95. I mean, it's just, to look at some of these records, I don't really, it's so difficult for me to look at these horses because I never take these kind of horses ever. Like, if you're 4-95, I assume you're probably going to lose again.
and I'm that way too, Mike, as you know, and even I'm picking this horse, but I mean, it's just your average 11-year-old off a 2-year layoff and comes back racing good. You know, it happens all the time.
We see it all the time. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's racing good. The 6 is racing good. The 2 was Louis' first choice. Probably, especially as bad as you guys have dogged the 7 in the race, I can't possibly use the horse. even though I am interested with McNair getting on because I feel like
McNair would have to physically carry the horse across the wire.
All right.
I was going to say one thing interesting before we move on. So Louis did pick the 2, but he was also torn between the 6 and the 7. So there is that also. He chose off an obvious speed horse
to drive that one
for his French buddies.
Yes.
That's what makes this race very interesting, just like the rest of them. So let's move on to race number 9. Numbers of 2 or 9,500 lifetime with a claiming tag of how much, Ray?
9,000.
9,000. Let's go to Josh here to start this one. Who do you like?
There was a lot of horses I really couldn't use in here. I'll start off saying that way. I thought there was a bunch that, the 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, I didn't really want any part of. I thought for my pick 4, I could, as chalky as it sounds, really only use a 1, 6, or 8. I just thought Crampion Road, you know, was so far back last time. And if, depending how light my shadow races earlier on in the card, if he comes back and validates himself, I've thought Crampion Road's kind of logical at the claiming level. You know, he raced pretty decent in the super final consolation. And then Crazy I Am dropping in class. I mean, he was chasing around Knocking Boots and Matsumistician, horses I assume we'll see in the Western Canada Pacing Derby of Limbs on Saturday. So that's a much, much tougher field. I mean, post 8, but I'm not super concerned about that. And it's mainly just the fact of what's inside of him that I'm not sold on. The only other one I could really make a case for is Hayes Stanley, who's at least been consistent, although I don't love some of the fields he's been in. I think some of those non-2 claimers have been pretty light when looking at some of those fields he's been in compared to what Grampian Road has faced. But I kind of thought 6 and 8, as unexciting as it sounds, stood out.
The thing I like, though, about the 1 is the horse is at least being put into the race. And when you have horses that race in these lower conditions, I tend to want to find horses where they want to go first over. They want to trip out because it shows that there is something there, even if in the stretch they're hanging and they're getting second or third. And so to me, that's an appeal for Hayes Stanley, just purely because I looked at this race and I only marked the first 2 morning line favorites and I went, there's something wrong here. There has to be something else that I'm missing. And the 1 at least shows some kinds of life. So in that way, sure, he's 1 for 24, but I mean, there are other horses in here that have much stiffer records than that.
Just very interesting. So these horses that we're talking about, your top two morning line favorites, Crazy I Am. That was the first pick. And the second pick in the race was Grampian Road. The third pick was Hey Stanley. So those are the top three. Mm-hmm. Looks like the top three choices for us. I agree with those three horses. I think it's got to be one of those three. Murray, what say you?
It's hard to make a case for anyone else. I mean, I'm not going to be able to come up with a great case for Got to Be Rowdy or President's Rescue. I'm not capable of that. But the one caveat would be, even though I like 8 and 6 like everyone else, and for me, Hey Stanley's an underneath horse only. I mean, the 6 is 1 for 19 and the 8 is 3 for 40. So it's right. Not like they're not win machines, mm-hmm. but they're better horses. They are better. I mean, for me, it's 8, 6 and some combination of 1, 3, 5 underneath. And it's just hard to make it. This race is not as wide open, I don't think, as some of the other ones. So maybe you can get by, like Josh said, even though it's chalky, get by with the 6 and 8 in this leg in your multis. And I think that's the way to go.
Okay, so not a whole lot more to say about that one. The last race, which is going to decide everything, unless it has it wrapped up prior to the 10th.
Yeah.
Six claimer. This is a
six?
Teepee's here. Six claimer. Person 4,800. First pick in the race here was Mark with Blue Hue, the 5, and that horse is your 2-to-1 morning line favorite. Let's go to Murray to finish this.
Well, I think McNair's got the hammer here with Kootenay Lager myself. Blue Hue definitely is a good horse. 9 wins, certainly nothing wrong with them. High percentage trainer, Greg Manning. But the way Kootenay Lager has raced this year for Logan, he's been ultra consistent, always comes home good, always passes horses, you know, can roll from the back. He can sit close. I think McNair's got a really good draw here, or I guess a draft pick, not a draw. With Kootenay Lager, didn't even have to have first pick to get him. I think he's going to be super tough from the 3-hole. I'm not sure why he's 6-to-1, not picked anywhere. For me, the only horse I could even think about picking ahead of Kootenay Lager would be Blue Hue. So I've got 3-5 here, and then you could throw underneath, I think, almost anyone. But I looked at the 4 and the 7 as other horses underneath. But I like Kootenay Lager. I think Logan will have him ready. And he seems to race good on any type of track, and I think he'll get along well with McNair. And if he needs to win the competition with Kootenay Lager, I think we'll see that happen. Honestly,
yeah. So that was the second pick in the race. So
I was going to ask you that. Yeah, he was second pick. Okay.
And I think Blue Hue is a little bit difficult to gauge. I mean, that October 5th race obviously had trouble, and then came back at a higher level and ended up being pulled up and was really took no money in that race. And that was, you know, and then qualified well, kicked 28-3. But I feel like a difficult gauge off those last two. What do you think, Josh?
He's tough. I just want to mention Blue Hue was winning consistently at the 9,000 level, as you could see. But then when he tries to race the higher ones, I mean, getting pulled up and then you qualify and you throw him in for 6, to me, that doesn't signify a lot of confidence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree, Murray. This was a horse that Manning bought off of Bob Parrish, I think, after the 21st of October race. And then, tried to jump him up 2 weeks in a row and just went all wrong. And, to jam him in like this kind of leaves me with some question marks. One horse I've been wanting to see get back to a mile track is the 2 Custard's Dungeon for Bob Parrish. Raced pretty good. All 3 of his wins this year have come at the track on 2. And he's been facing better horses. You know, chasing around Fanatical Maniac, Wink and Win, Jesse's Girl. Those are definitely a cut above these. So on the class drop here, Dave Kelly, I think this horse, I don't think he's a lock by any means, but he should be a fair price, and I think he's going to race much better. His form looks a little yucky with the unfair start DNF, but he hasn't been beaten all that bad by better horses on a track that he doesn't get around on that great. So on the drop, better track for him, I think he's worth including.
Well, for whatever it's worth, too, when this horse was racing at track on 2, the horses that were beating him were HF the Great Pumpkin, Tropical Dragon, both Kelly horses. So if anything, Kelly probably understands the horse having competed with him. So maybe there's a benefit to that. I think this was one of those races, too, where I could see a lot happening. I definitely agree with you, Murray. The 3 is the most, in my opinion, the most obvious horse on paper to use, because he's going to be forward. He's going to be put into the race. My only thing is, you know, I see the horse comes home in 30 seconds and such like that. And with the long stretch and looking at how this horse has performed on a mile track as of recently. The last start I can see is September 4th. I have no idea how well he'll be able to sustain that speed. It all comes down to the thing we've been saying all day or night or whatever the hell anyone's listening to this, of how the horses are finishing their races and taking into account, you know, if that horse is on the lead, do they tend to hold their speed, or is it truly the track playing against them? There's going to be a lot of kind of on the fly decisions to be made, both by us and of course also by these guys on the track, because for the most part, the way we're envisioning races turning out, nine out of these 10 races are probably not going to unfold that way. But just trying to rationalize for sake of being able to compute some kind of value, I think there are two real good horses to use underneath that we haven't touched on either. One of them, the 6 Naked Burner, it seems like this horse probably would do best tripping out and having some kind of cover to follow. And on top of that, moving to the mile track, that's a horse I'm definitely going to be eyeing to try and include in my tries and supers, as well as the 8, the Real Goods, to the far outside. That's a horse who could blast off or just try and find some helmet to follow. And you look back to his form at the track on 2, it was against weaker company, but the horse was always firing home in 27, 28 seconds. So it seems like the horse has some kind of go. My only concern is when the horse was firing home like that, he was chasing other horses. And we know horses can chase horses better than they can close on them. So how much of that speed is truly his versus how much of it is just him trying to keep up, I can't say. I see that race last out against Oriental Express was beaten by a horse who may be better than him. We'll know probably after Oriental Express races on that night. There might be some value in the 8 in the underneath spots. I originally thought maybe on the win, but it's tough to justify from that outside post.
One thing I'll mention about the don't wager too much off of track on 2 last quarters, because they are hand timed. hand timed is the key with any track on 2. Yeah, I mean, they quite often click the thing at the little bit of a wrong time and you get some wild last quarters there. But the Real Goods is a follower. He followed Oriental Express last time. He could follow. Just it might be a little bit tough for him to follow out of the 8 hole. But I understand what you're saying. He does have good mile track form. I agree with that. He did generally race well at track on 2. Pretty much always when Brandon drives him, he races good. So to me, that's going to be a challenging spot for Pascal.
Well, I'm going to probably key the 3, I think, in the pick 4 here, because he feels like the most likely winner, and could – the fact that he is 6-1 morning line should provide a little bit of value in that last leg, especially in Maltese, even though I don't think he'll be 6-1 on the board. He's going to stick that pretty quick to most people that can read the paper. So a lot of good information on this podcast. I mean, even the stuff that Josh gave us, the stuff that Murray gave us from some of these tracks up in Canada that the average person won't know, that the hand timing of the final quarters, different wind and the different problems in different races. I mean, this is stuff that really, if you're listening to try to gain some insight, this is the kind of stuff that you want. So I feel like that this has been very insightful, even for me. Somebody that does pay attention to the races. Let's, if you guys have late pick 4s, let's give those out and then we'll wrap it up. So, Ray, do you have a late pick 4?
I don't. I might come the card, but as of this point, no.
Okay. Murray?
Yeah, I've got 2378 with 2368. I put in Firm Ringo. That's the one that'll get me the pool. with 6-8 with 3. Kootenay Lager, Mikey in the last, same as you, Mike. I think you know, definitely not going to be 6-1, but I think more people will probably go to Blue Who. And the thing about Kootenay Lager, I wanted to mention, 30 flat coming home last couple of times, bad conditions. He was always a stone cold closer for Logan Gillis, like all last year and most of the start of this year. And then he's taught this horse to leave too. But for me, he's always a horse that comes home well. I think those 30s can definitely be quicker up at the mile. So I just think he's a solid play there in the last.
Josh.
I spent $54. I might have to get my co-host, James Junkwith, the Rainmaker, to pick him on it. But I went 378 with 256 with 6-8. And then in the last leg, I went 235. Custard's Dungeon, Kootenay Lager, and Blue Who. Couple mid price in there. I hope I can catch. I don't have quite the crazy Firm Ringo, but that's why Murray has these crazy tickets at Hitton. We all see him on Twitter.
Yeah, but it's good to, you know, lots of value, lots of separators in those tickets. So I don't mind those tickets. I was 237 with 236 with 168 with the three, and that's 27 for a dollar. We're going to put some of these picks up on the In the Money podcast website. So, and we also have every Century Mile card we have on NahuPicks.com, and Murray does the picks for those for us.
I do. Ray, by the way, the late pick four on opening day was on the Nahu website, paid the entire pool. So I don't know, not too many people following, I guess. But
apparently,
well, you got the entire pool then.
Did you have it?
I put it out on the website for everybody, but yes.
I do punch those tickets if I am.
I know. I thought maybe you would have. I do. I thought maybe you'd split it with me, Mike. But we'll have more money to go after on this night.
So Ray, you're at Rosecroft tonight.
Yeah, I'm heading down to Maryland actually in a couple hours to call tonight's 14 race card. I got my call sheets right next to me. I was folding them during the podcast. 14 races, all pretty much full fields. Not going to be a sloppy track like last week. So if we can even get a cent of the Murray Slough dime, I think we're going to have a great night tonight.
I might tune in, Ray. I enjoy your calls. You do a great job. I might tune in. I'm going to definitely bet the Western Fair pick five carryover. That's the only time I bet Western Fair. But you give me a carryover there with Alberta legend Pat Barr in the first leg, I'm definitely in. But I might tune in to Rosecroft as well. And I do enjoy your calls.
I'll be there tonight, and then I'm going to be there next Thursday and the Thursday after that. And then I those are all the dates I have to confirm as of now. Otherwise, yeah, I'm on Twitter. I'm doing whatever I want, and I'm working everywhere. It's a great life.
Edison Hatter's jumping back in here. Ray Catola, what are you doing after Rosecroft?
After Rosecroft, I'm going to be going to sleep.
Josh, give us a wrap. Give us where we can follow you.
Well, I'm on Twitter at jmurph98, usually conversing with Murray. We usually get chatting. Like I said, my co-host James Junquist on air. He's very active on Twitter, as Murray would know. That
he's a beaut, by the way. He's he's cool. I like him.
He loves his soccer parlays, which is not my realm, but you know, more power to him.
We're in the same hotel right now, and he's got some six thing with the Poland-Mexico game, if this happens and that, and I'm like, dude, whatever works for you. But yeah, no, we usually try to tweet something during the races. I mean, Murray's always on there, and we try to go back and forth a little bit, and that's where we kind of discuss some stuff and what may be going on, and kind of update throughout the night too, depending on circumstances, weather, kind of stuff you can't pre-plan in your handicapping.
We used to interact with Jamie whenever he was doing Running Aces, and I used to bet him whenever he was, and we used to get prices on him too. And he did some shows with Darren, the announcer, and I was on a couple of those shows, so I'm sure he remembers that. Murray, what do you have for us to finish up here as far as
I did my off season? So my company, we sell landscape supplies. We don't sell them in the winter, so I'm off there. Not working at Century Downs until the spring. I am announcing, apparently filling in for Dylan on New Year's Eve at Century Mile. So look for that. Otherwise, on Twitter at Murray Slough, Slough. And that's about it. I'll be firing away. I think that we'll be talking on Twitter on the night of. And I think Gordon to Josh's Twitter is good for, he has all this, you know, the scratches, the updates, everything like that. He'd be the guy to look for all that kind of stuff on Thursday night.
What kind of landscaping stuff? You got mulch?
Yes, mulch. Yeah, soil, gravel, mulch, sand, decorative
tractors, decorative rock.
Yes, absolutely.
Why didn't we do a whole podcast on that? I'm so interested in that.
Soilkings.com, my friend.
Oh my god! All right, so a couple things from my end. You can follow me on Twitter at Nahu Mikey P 2 E's. I typically have picks for Mohawk. Once in a while, I'll sub in at Western Fair for Ontario Racing. I do some Flamborough picks there too. We have a huge roundtable coming up, actually, two this week for Meadowlands, mm-hmm. TVG Finals night. So that'll be Ray, Robert Reed Jr., Garnett Barnsdale, Derek Gibner, and me and Edison will be on that one. Mm-hmm. That drops Wednesday night. Another thing to look at, too, just the last thing here, is check out Standard Bread Canada for all the coverage on National Driving Championship. There is a ton of articles, driver profiles, the picks, the first selections, a lot of good content there. And apparently they're going to put this podcast up on Standard Bread Canada here as soon as it drops. So we'll you'll be able to see it there. Check it out before Saturday night. Enjoy the races. We'll be on Twitter enjoying those races that night. Enjoy your Thanksgiving. And thanks, guys, for doing this. And we'll see you next time on First Over.
All right. Yeah, most likely I'll be